Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your hosts, Adam Emmert.
Daryl Bevel has two binders. One is entitled The Bad Place, and one is entitled The Good Place.
And Brandon Schultz.
If you've ever been to a football game, you know the standard etiquette is to boo the opposing team.
Go Hawks!
On a quest to own the West, yippee-ki-yay, we make the ground shake, on game day 12, man, yay, feeling it is vital, the Seahawks coming to take division.
Welcome to episode 172 of the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Hey, Brandon, stop me if you've heard this one before, but the Seahawks are starting the season slowly.
I don't know if I've ever heard that before. The Seahawks never start the season slow. We're always right out of the gate quickly and dominating everybody in our path on our way to Super Bowl victory.
Right.
I mean, why would you say anything different?
That's a great, good. I'm glad that we're on the same page here, because apparently, you know, half the people out there, half the 12s out there seem to forget that this is how it goes every year. This is how it goes. This is what we do.
Well, it's how it goes. And not only that, we're playing good teams on the road to start off the season. We're not playing slouch teams. We've taken on the Packers in week one, and now the Titans, who, yes, I understand they used to be a slouch team, but now they're pretty good. They've had a lot of top draft picks now, and they have a good coach.
Yeah, and a great quarterback.
It happens.
Yeah. That's one of those things, you know, and Seahawks have struggled on the road in September. Like, that's just part of it. So, yeah, I don't know. There's just a lot of hysteria out there over the last week or so, especially on Sunday. It was kind of like, beep, beep, back the truck up. I think we're fine. There was actually a lot of positives that I saw in this game that I'd like to talk about. And I think everything is going to work out just fine.
Okay, well, we'll talk about your thoughts on how things will turn out just fine, because, yes, people need to hear this. They need to know, Adam, from you, this is going to be just fine. And,
well, us, dude.
I don't. I mean, apparently. It's not just you. I'll help you. I will help you out, because I'm not completely down in the dumps, too. I understand this road, winning on the road thing can be difficult.
Yeah, it's a minor detail in this equation.
So we'll talk about this last game, the loss to the Tennessee Titans on the road. We'll talk about the upcoming game against the Indianapolis Colts. And Adam, I am super fired up about our guest this week, Hall of Fame left tackle Walter Jones of the Seattle Seahawks, coming on this show to be our guest.
I am so jealous, Brandon. You got to sit down and talk with Big Walt. He scheduled it, and it happened to be the exact moment that I boarded an airplane leaving Arkansas. So I was unable to join the conversation, but I really look forward to listening to it. I'm sure that was exciting, man.
It was pretty exciting, and it was on the nerve-wracking side, too. I'm not going to lie.
Really? It's unlike you to be nervous.
I know.
You've even met him before, like twice.
I have met him twice before.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you think he was going to pancake you or something?
I didn't know what to think. I just knew that am I going to say something really dumb that makes me look stupid? Like, you worry about these things.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you are. We do it every week. That's half the charm of the show.
I'm used to it with our audience, though. It's when we have guests on that it makes me extra nervous. It doesn't matter if it's Hall of Fame left tackle Walter Jones, or if it's, you know, a field goals writer, or just somebody from, you know, that isn't us.
Yeah, the Packers podcast. Yeah, right?
Yeah. I get nervous every time. I can't help it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you pulling through for us, man. And that was a fun get, and a really cool thing he's doing to they're kind of creating a site where they get to kind of have more in-depth conversations with fans, players and fans.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to him about it. And there's a couple of things I want to talk about. We're bringing back the wave in the game against the Colts. I want to talk about why we're doing that. And I don't know if you noticed this. You may have heard, but there was something more than football that was in the news this weekend. It had to do with football.
Your mom? Your mom was in the news?
No.
Oh, there was something else. Okay.
I think there was a mixture of politics and sports, and I feel like it's worth addressing, but I want to talk football before we get into the second half of the show.
Oh, hell yes. Definitely football. Let's get into this Titans game, Brandon.
Yes, and I want to start off. I know we've talked about how we're not worried, but there is a place in me that does see some cause for concern. And it's when I watched the game on Sunday against the Titans, I had that feeling that, you know, there was a time when we didn't have to worry about the Seahawks being the most physical team on the field. They just were. And in this game against the Titans, I did not see them as the more physical team.
I can recall them being the more physical team going into a couple of games on the road in environments that were over 100 degrees and not be the more physical team.
Like the Chargers, the Carolina like Panthers, the Dolphins.
Yeah.
It's happened.
I mean, that's at the peak of their, you know, physical dominance, really, you know, 2012, 2013, and still struggle early on the road in the heat. And look, a lot of people, I got taken to task by Garrett in the Seahawks Ring of Honor about talking about the heat, but it's a factor when it's 108 degrees on the field and it's 90 odd some percent humidity. And, the announcer has a joygasm over the fact that you brought your own shade. you know, like it is a factor. I mean, this last weekend I worked in Louisiana and it was hot as hell. And I mean, I don't care. I've been down there all summer back and forth, right? Still not prepared for it. It's just a different animal. When you don't live in that, you're just never going to quite be prepared for it. And I think that did play a factor. And a lot of people will poo-poo that. But you saw the defense fall off in the second half. And I think the heat is, you know, maybe 27% of that. And the other part of it, too, I mean, if you say, well, that, you know, that's a bunch of crap, blah, blah, blah. Well, the Tennessee defense also struggled in the second half. And we all know that that's the side of the ball that you tend to become more tired on. So I think that was a factor right there. That's probably why they weren't quite as physical as you're used to.
Well, and after the first and second quarters, where the offense could not stay on the field, could not complete a third down, I listened back to the radio broadcast for the Seahawks, listening to Warren Moon and Steve Rabel. And Warren, at the end of the second half, he was prophetic because he said, I hope this defense isn't so tired from being on the field in the heat through these first two quarters that they can't hold up in the second half. It was something to that effect. And it really stood out to me after having watched it through the first time.
Yeah. So I think that was, I don't know that Warren Moon needed a crystal ball to, like, you know, predict that one.
No.
You know, Miss Cleo power's not strong there, but I do think that was a portion of it. I think the other portion of it, we got out schemed in the second half. Being said, I've only been home for 11 hours since Friday and I slept night of it, I have not had a chance to go back and rewatch this game. But it felt like when they really started clicking the Titans on offense, they were popping runs to the outside. We were unable to contain the running game on the outside. And whatever adjustment was made there, I think that they got us on that. And it's a lot like we've seen in previous seasons, too. I mean, I recall a game against the 49ers, and then we played another team or two after that, and they all did the same thing to us. They kept running this trap play inside, and we just got smeared with it. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, what's wrong with the defense? We're screwed forever. And they figured it out. And I think that was a little bit of what went on here today, too, or on Sunday.
And the third quarter was the one bad quarter. And three big plays. You know, the Seahawks go up 14-9 after the half. Chris Carson gets his first NFL touchdown. That was cool to see. But then after that, the defense, man, Rishard Matthews has the 55-yard pass where Frank Clark jumps off sides. And then it looks like he had a hamstring issue that he wasn't able to chase down Matthews. And, you know, they had all their blockers out in front of Matthews, take it down the field. Jonnu Smith has a 24-yard pass out of the backfield from Mariota. And then DeMarco Murray, a 75-yard run. When was the last time we've seen three big plays like that? Three big plays, all in, not just in one game, but in one quarter.
The Falcons game last year. And it was in the third quarter, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much it. Look, I mean, you're going to get got sometimes. Again, you're on the road, adverse conditions. And then I think another thing that factored into this, too, Brandon, I think there was some mental fatigue going into this game. I had heard that they had a 4-hour meeting before that game. Yeah. 4 hours? Dude, there's no wonder Russell Wilson was sailing passes. You know what I mean? Like, they're heads were just not quite in it. And the defense came out mad. I mean, if they were super physical in the first half. They were by far the more physical team in the first half.
Usually it's difficult to relate to what NFL players go through. But I think if you think about some of the meetings you've sat through and how long they can feel like, if you've ever sat through a 4-hour meeting, you are not right after that.
Right. Because, you know, there was like the same four dudes, like just repeating themselves over and over and over again. That's what happens in 4-hour meetings, you know? Like everybody else sits there with their arm crossed. They're like, yeah, I think we've already decided on this, you know? And you're just tired of it. Yeah. I think that had a little to do with it too.
Well, Russell was missing high. He missed a throw to Doug Baldwin early on that could have been a big play. The other things that really impacted the first half, penalties kept this defense on the field in some cases in the first half. Shoot, you had Richard Sherman, who had three penalties on a negated interception. Now, one of those was pass interference before the throw. One was holding after the interception. And the third one was because he took off his helmet to argue with the ref because he thought that, I don't know if he thought that Decker was trying to push off or what, but that when he got called for the pass interference, but three penalties on one play.
Yeah. So the pass interference, Richard Sherman has every right to that spot on the field that Eric Decker does. That was BS. He absolutely did. And then the holding play, like Eric Decker is on his knees. Why would he hold him? You don't need to hold Eric Decker at that point. He's on his freaking knees. It's ridiculous. And then pulling your helmet off in front of the ref, that was freaking dumb.
Right.
You just can't do that. That was beyond dumb. Now, one of the positives I think came out of this game, Brandon, is we got Richard Sherman's annual meltdown game out of the way in week three.
Nice.
Now we're good.
We're good. We won't have any more meltdowns for the rest of the season.
No, he's always good for one a year.
Yeah. Okay.
It's always good for one. Yeah.
You've used up your allotment, Richard. No more meltdowns.
I think that's all he needs. Okay. I think he just needs one. Just get it out of his system, you know, and then he's good. He's like, all right, now I'm straight. And they gave up a zillion first downs on all those penalties.
Yes, they
like
did.
That was a big problem. So the idea that the offense didn't help them out by moving the ball in the first half, well, the defense didn't do themselves any favors because most of those penalties were legit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one thing, though, that makes me think that Richard Sherman got right inside the actual game was that he got to lay a pretty big hit on Marcus Mariota. I think that helped him.
That was stupid. That was a bad play. Look, I get that Mariota's like was one foot was still like in bounds. But he was clearly going out of bounds. There was no need for that hit. It was bush league. It was small. And I thought that was terribly done by him. Way different than the hit on Jared Goff last year, where Jared Goff was trotting down the sidelines all lackadaisical. Like,
right.
He wasn't intending to go out of bounds. And so, yeah, blow his ass up. But when it came to that, Mariota, that's bush league, dude.
I don't think that he got penalized for a late hit on that play, though. I think he was penalized for the activity that happened because both sides, the official said that the penalty came after the play and penalties were on both sides. And the Titans didn't get a first down after it. And I could be wrong about this, but if it were a penalty for a late hit, wouldn't have been an automatic first down in that case, even with the Titans retaliating and getting called for a penalty after the whistle.
Okay, so he got called for the late hit, and it was a personal foul.
Right.
And that was offset by whatever they called on the Titans, right? But if he would have been called for shenanigans on the sidelines, that would have been unsportsmanlike conduct. And if he would have gotten that at that point, he'd have been tossed.
Oh, because he had the one unsportsmanlike with the official before.
Correct.
Okay.
So he definitely got called for, you know, the hit. And then knucklehead Taylor Lewan. Well, not a knucklehead. That's what you do if your quarterback gets blasted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens. And on the Tennessee sideline, that wasn't going to, you know. And give Mariota credit. Apparently, he got up and told him good hit.
Yeah. Well, and Lewan and Sherman looked like they were just, you know, chopping it up after the game, too. So it didn't sound like there were any hard feelings. Yeah. The Titans actually put a post up on their Twitter account showing Lewan and Sherman talking, you know, smiling and talking after the game. So it was all good.
Oh, he didn't get Trent Williams after? Yeah.
No. When I saw it, I was kind of waiting for that.
No, that was a Bush League play. I mean, the defense did a few things themselves that were self-inflicted. And I don't know, maybe when they came out in the second half as well, they just, after watching the offense just do diddly poo for pretty much the entire first half, except for their final drive, maybe they were just like just a little mentally drained at that point, you know, between the flag stuff and all that. They were just like, you know, nothing's going our way. It's on the road. I'm hot as hell. Screw it. And they mailed it in a little bit.
Well, the offense sure did come alive, though, in the second half. I don't know why we can't just start that way. Like, why can't this team, with the way that they're able to put points up on the board quickly, why not try and work at that tempo in the first quarter? Try and get up a score or two, particularly on the road, because on the road is where we see this team struggle the most. Why not try and get up early and then get the run game going to try and get things slowed down, try and establish the run, and then give the defense a little bit of a lead to protect throughout the game?
You know, that would be amazing to go ahead and have Russell Wilson airmail passes even faster for about two quarters until he settles down and put the defense out there even quicker. It's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. What could go wrong? Instead of actually committing.
How much faster can you go three and out?
They actually, the first drive, they committed to Chris Carson and they got a first down. Like, they actually moved the ball a little bit. And then all of a sudden, where's Chris Carson? I mean, he barely touched the ball. And then Thomas Rawls gets one carry? Man, you're screwed up at that point. They aren't committed enough.
Thomas Rawls, he didn't even have a carry. He may have been out there. He was out there for a snap, I think.
Okay. Yeah, he was out there for one play that I can recall. And yeah. Look, they don't commit enough to the run game early. That's my problem, especially when you're having a little bit of success.
I would have liked to see him go with the run a little bit more, but especially when it looked like Russell was off with the passes and it looked like they needed to settle down. I'm just talking about in the future. It seems to me like against a good team, you would want to try and get up on the board early because it's playing from behind. I'm just frustrated. Frustrated from playing from behind. And it should have been worse in this game, too, because the Titans had an amazing punt return called back. And fortunately, we get a block in the back call, but it had no impact on the play, whether or not that dude was going to be able to tackle because he was blocked in the back into another blocker. And he wouldn't have been able to make that tackle.
Right. I understand you're frustrated, man, but this is why it's wrongheaded to go up tempo so early. If you can keep the defense off of the field by running the football and actually keep, you know, the ball in your hands and keep the time of possession going, even if you're not scoring points, but you're keeping the defense fresh, by the time the second half rolls around, when you do crank it up and you're playing a little better, because it's just been clear, you know, since Pete Carroll's become coach, they need a half offensively to just get it worked out. It's just the way it is. It's how it's always been. It's how it always will be. You just got to accept it. So if that's the case, make it so that by the time you get to the second half, the defense isn't gassed and giving up two, three touchdowns in a row. So when you go on your little run, now you bury them. Just keep it close. Just keep it, you know, 7-6, something like that. But keep the time of possession in your favor, and you're good to go.
But we've seen that so much that you and I know they're going to try to establish the run. So early on in the game, I think that's what defenses know to do. They know that the Seahawks are going to try to run. They know what they're going to try and stop. They're probably going to try and throw a bubble screen or two. And they aren't going to try and challenge the defense at all early on.
Yeah, but they were having success early in this game with the run game. It was there.
So why go away from it?
Because they're freaking stupid sometimes. And it takes them a half to figure crap out. I don't know. I really don't know. That was one of the biggest questions in my mind as I sat and watched that game. I was like, what happened to, you know, handing the ball to Chris Carson? That was working.
Yeah.
Like, that was working. I don't get it.
Well, he finishes with 11 for 34 yards. Russell Wilson, 7 for 26 yards. CJ Procise, he had a nice little run up the middle for 6 yards, finished 4 for 9 yards. Just not enough running the ball, but Russell Wilson, he sure put it up through the air. 49 attempts and 373 yards. Usually when you see Russell Wilson, though, with more than 40 attempts, it's usually an L in the loss column.
Yeah, career high for passing yards for Russell. But again, I've never been big into yards, and I think that's a total bummer. I mean, 11, what, carries for your running back? That's a joke show. Like, and I understand they were down in the second half and they had to throw the ball and blah, 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 blah. But even 11 carries and a half is a joke show. Like, that's not enough.
No, especially when you look on the other side of the ball and you have DeMarco Murray with 14, Derrick Henry with 13. They got it done.
Yeah, and where's the read option in the first half too?
Yeah, that was, you know. Yeah, they decide. I don't. Can you not run read option on the road? Is that a part of the subsection of NFL rulebook, volume 3, that there shall be no read option running on the road?
No, because we've discussed this on the Ring of Honor. Daryl Bevel has two binders. One is entitled The Bad Place, and one is entitled The Good Place. And the read option is most definitely not in the Bad Plays binder. Mm. It's in the Good Plays binder, and he refuses to pull out the Good Play binder until about 2 minutes before the end of a half. And then he's like, oh, here it is. I've been looking for you, you know, dust it off. I don't know. Maybe one of the backup linemen is sitting on it for the majority of the half. You know, maybe Doug Baldwin is a prankster and we don't know it. And he just likes to hide it, like, you know, for half the game. And that's basically why Bevel's play calling so disjointed. He's like looking around the sidelines the whole time, just trying to find it.
This happens every week. I told myself this was the week I was going to remember where I put this.
Right. Somehow Pete Carroll finds it hilarious, so he just lets it go on. You know, that's the only explanation. I don't know.
You don't need any.
Tell me if I'm wrong.
I can't say that you're wrong. I'm going to say that it's unlikely because I don't know why you would give yourself more of a challenge on the road when you're already playing a good team, but you never know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But let's talk about some of the positives, though, Brandon. I thought the positive is that the offensive line actually played like a 19th best in the league offensive line game. It was decent.
I will give them credit. It was not terrible. And I'd have to say that I could accept them playing like that and clean up some of the penalties and play like that week to week. And I think we have a lot less to complain about. Don't you look at this game and kind of, I know we talked about the heat, but don't you have to kind of point the finger at the defense and say, look, the offense scored 4 touchdowns in this game. They had no issues in the red zone. That's about as good as you're going to get from this offense. You have to stop the point. You can't allow the other team to score 33 points.
Yeah, I think Chris Richard got out schemed a little bit in the second half. I mean, I really do believe that is what happened there. And you know, combine that, it was a perfect storm, right? You've got consternation before the game, where your head's not really in it.
Both teams had to deal with that, though.
Right, but Mike Bennett's one of the dudes at the forefront of this. Like, this team has been one of the teams at the forefront of this. So, like, I mean, in these personalities and the free-spirited Pete Carroll locker room, like, sure, both teams, you know, have to deal with it. But I'm sure it was a little more intense in the Seahawks locker room. Like, no doubt, this is the week it really became a distraction for the team, like, straight up. But you couple all that, you get out-schemed, and you play a smash-mouth run team, like, and it's hotter than, you know, the hubs of hell. Like, it really, at the end of the day, like, that is the perfect storm for a defense to wear out in the second half. It really is.
So your positive takeaways are this defense is still going to be awesome. Look at last year. They gave up 21 points to Atlanta at home and still went on to be awesome most of the year. They, you know, what, third most in points allowed. They can they can still do that this year. And you've seen enough from the offense. CJ Procise now has played in three games and hasn't gotten injured, which is awesome because we saw him be a huge factor in this game, running down the sidelines, catching a pass. Paul Richardson caught a touchdown, didn't get injured. We've had multiple games now where our injury prone guys haven't gotten injured. And should I knock on wood? Well, do you need me to knock on wood?
No, because it's already too late because CJ Procise has an ankle and he's questionable for next week.
I think he has two ankles.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But he has an ankle injury and he's questionable for next week.
I spoke too soon.
I didn't mean to burst your bubble.
Doug Baldwin also came out of the Doug Baldwin came out of the game too with a groin injury and it sounds like he's questionable for this weekend, but he wants to play.
Yeah, give him a week. Dude, I know. We go through this every time, and I'm always like, rest the dude. And they're always like, no, he's going to play. And it always seems to work out. Somehow Richard Sherman was fine.
Jimmy Graham coming back from the hamstring was fine thing. In this game.
Yeah.
Seven catches, 72 yards. I guess we should probably give some credit to Jimmy Graham since we talked to, you know, the whole discussion through the first 2 weeks is, should we get rid of Jimmy Graham? But no, here he was, seven catches, 72 yards.
Yeah, the GFG. Getting after it. Jimmy freaking Graham, like actually having a really good game for the first time this season. And we often forget as much as we're like, oh, we never get Jimmy Graham involved. You know, he dang near had 1,000 yards last year.
Right.
He had the greatest season in Seahawks history for a tight end. And we're like, wait, Jimmy Graham sucks. But we kind of suck.
I know. As, you know? As fans, by not recognizing that, yeah. Because Jimmy Graham, if he stays on his pace of even the pace that he's on through the first three games, he will become the most prolific pass-catching tight end in Seahawks history by the end of the season.
Correct. So exactly. We suck a little bit sometimes. A little bit.
I'm glad we can recognize that as fans when we do suck a little bit.
Yeah. A little self-reflection is good for the soul. And I definitely had to do that when thinking about the GFG this week. So good for Jimmy. I thought that was a real positive. I mean, Doug Baldwin was an absolute monster out there. I mean, he played amazing. You saw the offense take strides. You saw them find some rhythm. And for the second week in a row, right? Sure, they stunk it up for a half, but they also found it again against a pretty darn good defense on the road in those conditions. I think that's a major positive. You saw the defense be dominant for that first half. It wasn't that they were just good. They were smacking people upside the head. They were dominant. And that's more the defense we'll see going forward. No doubt about it. Jeremy Lane was mismatched out there. Like, I don't understand. That's another thing that I had a problem with Chris Richard in this game. Mm. Jeremy Lane got pushed all over the field. Why isn't Shaq Griffin out there more for this game? The bigger physical corner. That I don't understand.
It just seems to me that they're trying to work Shaq Griffin in a little bit to give him a little bit more time. We also didn't see, when was the last time we saw Justin Coleman playing in the slot?
Who?
after a solid first game when Jeremy Lane went out, we haven't seen Justin Coleman in that corner.
Oh, that's the guy I saw in the milk container the other day. Like he's gone.
He's gone.
His mom is sad. Like nobody knows where Justin Coleman went.
All right, Adam. Well, I think we have covered this game against the Titans, and I'm done talking about a loss. Plus, I want to get to our conversation with Hall of Fame left tackle Walter Jones.
Here he comes, Big Walt. Enjoy, people.
This week on the show, we welcome on Walter Jones, a Hall of Fame offensive lineman for the Seahawks, drafted number 6 overall in the 1997 draft. Played with the Seahawks from 1997 until 2009, a member of the Seahawks Ring of Honor, a 9-time Pro Bowler, a 4-time First Team All-Pro, and a member of the 2000s All-Decade Team. Walt, welcome to the show.
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
So you're also here to talk about FanCom, which is a new online football community where actual players like you lead discussion and debate with NFL fans. And this is the cool part. Fans don't have to worry about some of the other things that we have to deal with online, like people who are just there to be trolls and jerks. What made you decide to get involved with this?
I think it's pretty awesome. You know, I think all players have dealt with, you know, having a voice and being able to really talk about the football and interact with real fans that's going to come in and ask questions. So I thought it was a great opportunity for me to be a part of.
Twitter's a great way for people to interact or at least have access to players online. But so what's different with this service?
You know, we just want to be a conversation with the fans. You know, you want fans to feel like they're part of something. So as a player, you want to be able to go somewhere, and there's not a limit on how you can speak. You know, a lot of times Twitter, they're limited to what you want to say in character. So you have to almost know how to Twitter talk. So I think that's a great opportunity for you can get your voice out there. If anybody want to talk to you about the game, the previous week, or anything that's going on football related that you can relay without worrying about if you're going to be cut off by characters.
Now, Walt, I wish you were joining us under better circumstances because the Seahawks lost this weekend, 33-27 to the Titans. With what you've seen with the team through the preseason and through the first three games, what are your thoughts on the team so far?
I think they're still trying to, you know, the defense, I think there's there. You know, I think this team is built around the defense. So you're going to be definitely counting on the defense to go out there and win games for you. But right now, I think offensively, you know, this game was, you know, I think it was a positive that it was able to get some points on the board. And still, you know, the thing that they teach all the time is all about competition and competing. I think, you know, in that second half, I think as a unit, as an offensive unit, those guys competed and they was able to put points on the board. And you know, you look at all these games and still, you know, you can point fingers and say the offense haven't figured it out. But I think the thing that makes it so cool is that, you know, they still at the end, they had an opportunity to be in that game, to win that game, you know? So I think that's a great positive for this offense that they can go out there and put points on the board.
I mean, in a game like this, it's really hard to decide, though. Like, as fans, we try and say, oh, well, you know, I put this game on the offense, or I put this game on the defense. And really, this last game against the Titans, you know, it was the defense got the job done in the first half and then struggled through the second half. And then it was the opposite for the offense. So, I mean, how do you look at that?
Well, I look at it as the way it's a team sport and things are going the game. I think it was a hot game, and you don't want to use that as an excuse, but you kind of knew what Tennessee wanted to do. You know, they knew in the fourth quarter that they could, you know, going into the second half, they could wear this defense. I think they took upon themselves, you know, to go out there and fight with Seattle. And I think, you know, now Seattle is a formidable team that everybody gauges. You know, a couple of years ago, it was all about the Seahawks trying to see could they gauge with teams, and now Seattle is that team that everybody want to gauge and see where they're at as a unit. So I think from that standpoint, you know, the game kind of got out of hand for them. And the last thing you kind of, you know, if you got a team like that that feel comfortable with what they want to do, you know, Tennessee want to run the ball. And Tennessee felt pretty good, you know, going into that third and fourth quarter that they could run the ball, and they was able to do that. And, you know, you know that this Seahawks defense is not going to let that happen too many often during the season. So, you know, that was a great game plan by Tennessee. And you hopefully next week that everybody can gather itself and it can be a great team win next week and feel confident going into the next week game.
So how much does heat and weather and that sort of thing impact you when you're on the field? Because you went to school at Florida State, and a very different climate than up in the Pacific Northwest and up in Seattle. So did you have any hard times in any games where, you know, you've been in Seattle for a while and then you went somewhere down south where the heat was just, you know, unbearable? Did it impact you that much, or do players not like to use that as an excuse?
I think they don't like to use it, but it impacts you mentally. I think you have to, you know, that's what training camp for, to prepare you for that. And then you're glad that it's happening in early in the season, so you kind of can prepare you mentally and be mentally ready for that. But you still, you know, you can work and you still, that's a different in temperature. You know, you can be out in Seattle and you can say Seattle is hot and you prepare, but still, again, you're not going to be in that game shape or that game situation. And you got a team that used to practicing that every day. So that's going to take effect, you know, in the game. And still, no matter how hot it is or what, it's all about technique and who's going to make the mental mistake. And most of the time, when you have those big plays, it'll be mental mistakes.
If you were coaching the guys on the offensive line, what would you be telling them right now?
I would tell them to always, you know, as offensive line, everybody got to work together and continue working. The Steelers are a very young offensive unit. You know, you got parts. Like this weekend, they put a new guard in this week. So you just got to continue to try to get better each week and try to build something. I think, I think these games are built on quarters every game. So you take this next game, hopefully you can go in there and have some positive stuff and get a win. And then you go back and now you take those four games. And now what you do is you find your play that, hey, these are the plays that we had success on. And now the next four games, now you're going to get better with those plays and trying to find ways to make things happen off those plays that, you know, that you had success on. So you have to take it that way. And as a unit, you just have to continue to keep trying to get better each week and take those mistakes and try to make less mistakes every week. And that's usually what happens with an offensive line. You know, you put these young guys together and hopefully that you can consistently keep these guys together game in and game out. So now they're learning to play together and understanding what they need to do to be successful.
See, Walt, I just have to think that being a Hall of Famer, you would look at another offensive lineman and say, why can't you just be awesome? I mean, I did it. Just go out there and be awesome. Like I was. Just do that.
I don't know. I don't know if you can, I wouldn't say that because everybody plays the game different. Everybody attacked the game different. You know, these guys can play at this level, so you don't take it as that. You know, you go out there and you try to be consistent. You know, I think that's what kind of literally, you know, and everybody's fighting and trying to do the right thing. I don't think those guys are not going out there and trying to be great. You know, you go out there and you play the game the way you play it and you let other people tell you that the things that you're doing are awesome, but you're out there competing and fighting and trying to not make mistakes. And I know that those guys are doing the same thing.
So the reports were in the offseason that you were consulting with George Fant. And what were your thoughts and feelings when you saw him go down to injury in the preseason?
You know, I felt sorry for the man. You know, it's sad because this guy definitely had put the work in. You know, last year, you know, I was, you know, a lot of time, you know, the team and itself, you know, they took a chance on George Fant and they really liked the potential of what this guy could become. You know, unknown, a guy that was playing basketball that kind of got into football at a later stage and the Seahawks took a chance on it. And the story's amazing. A guy that haven't played football to take it up after he was pretty good at playing basketball. And last year, you know, when I, you know, a lot of, you know, the team and players were saying, hey, you know, you need to talk to this guy. And he took it upon himself to come to me. You know, I wasn't going to go to this guy and try to, you know, put what I know about this game. If he wanted to be good or learn how to play this game, he had to come to me, and that's what he did. And for me, that was, you know, pretty cool. And, you know, I'm here to offer anybody any help on how to watch this game, how to play this game, how to study this game. You know, I'm willing to give that if someone take upon themselves to do that. And George did that. And I was, you know, and the weight that he put on, the strength that he put on, and the watch and field during the all season, the training and stuff, the stuff that he was doing to be a better player than he was the year before. And I think as offensive linemen and any guy, that's what you have to do to say, okay, I'm going to be better than I was the year before every year. And that's what sustains you during your career is you got to try to get better than you were. You go back and you look at your family and say, oh, I got to be better than I was last year. And George, from that standpoint, did everything that he needed to do to be better than he was last year. And I feel so bad for this person because, you know, he got the nod that he was going to be the starting left tackle going into the season, no matter, you know, how you play the rest of the season, the rest of this preseason. And for him to go down like that, I feel awful for him. But I know that the work that he put in, he's going to put that same work in to get back to that same point again. And I think he's going to have that determination.
It's just an incredible story to me because I look at George Fant and I don't know enough about the offensive line, but I know that experience really helps. And to not have any experience in college playing that position, for him to go and play left tackle in the NFL, be a starter on the offensive line, it's an incredible story. And then it makes me think, is experience in college overrated?
I don't know if it's experience. I think it's just opportunity. I think that they took a chance on George, and I think a guy like that, you're hoping that, okay, I can get a couple of years. You know, I think they didn't go into thinking that George going to play last year or this year. You're thinking this guy's going to be around for a while, that's going to learn the system, a guy that you could just, you know, take up under your wings and kind of show him how to be an offensive lineman. But, you know, as everybody was going down, you know, the opportunity kind of presents itself, and they say, okay, let's see, let's, you know, and I think that's the cool thing about what Coach Carroll and all them did. You know, hey, well, let's put our guys that we believe in. And they, you know, they saw some in George, but, you know, I don't think they thought that that opportunity would come that fast for George. And, you know, and like I told him last year, he was what everybody was saying. He was a basketball player that's played offensive line, but that's the way he played last year. And still, you know, he went out there and used his abilities and still was able to show some signs of had some potential. And I think the Seahawks like that, and I kind of sat him down and kind of told him what he had to do to make himself available to still have that starting job going into the season. And he did everything he needed to do. And you feel bad for him for that to happen to him, but, you know, he definitely was doing everything he had to do to go out there and be successful this year.
Oh, yeah, and we're all rooting for him to come back, too, because it's such a good story. Now, another really great thing happened to the Seahawks team as an organization this offseason. We had another member elected to the Hall of Fame, Kenny Easley, inducted into the Hall of Fame this summer, and it sounds like he's going to be at the game this Sunday against the Colts. What were your thoughts on seeing him get inducted this summer?
It's totally awesome, man. I think it's one of those pass-ons, like, when Tez got in, you know, rest in peace to Cortez, you know, yeah. But, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, for us Seahawks, you know, we don't have that many in their Hall of Fame. So, you know, you worship every time you get a Seahawk to go in there. And for him, you know, a guy, the name that's been spoken up many, many times, and for him to get his chance, and, you know, you hear him talk and say, you know, you still, no matter how long it takes to get in there, you still feel the same way. You know, when you get there, you're happy for the guy, and I'm happy for him. And I was glad I was there to witness his induction. And it was awesome, man. And I think it's great for the city of Seattle to say, hey, we got another Hall of Famer. So we're continually keep building, you know, our list of Seahawks that's in the Hall of Fame. So that's pretty awesome.
Well, Walt, I want to go back to your playing days with the Seahawks. I want you to take us back to the 2005 NFC Championship game, because if nobody's seen this play, there's a play in the championship game where Sean Alexander is carrying the ball behind you and you're carrying Mike Rucker of the Panthers. And it's like a race to see which one of you can get across the goal line. Do you remember that play?
I definitely remember that play, man. You know, that was we call that the 95. It's a 95 stretch or 97 stretch or something like that. So it's like basically what's going on is, you know, no matter. And we worked that play year in, you know, because, you know, you trying to reach these defensive end, and they know that play is coming, but you got to try to, you have to all literally have to give ground to make up that ground. And we were running that play, and I Sean and the coach would just tell Sean to get to the sideline. And our job was to try to get in front of that guy before, you know, Sean got to that sideline so he could make his cut. So that was a hard play to block every time, because those defensive line was so quick. If you overstep them or gave up too much ground, they would be in the backfield and making that play. So for me, it was a very, you know, at that moment, because you knew that this was the, you know, you've been working on this play and now you got a chance to run this play in a game. You run it in practice all the time and you get a chance. And for me, you want to make that block. And at that point, when, you know, as an offensive line, when you feel like you're working a guy, and you get yourself inside and you feel this guy like, okay, you got the leverage and he can't do nothing with you. So you just, you know, at that moment, you're not thinking, okay, I'm going to take this guy this far. But I think it was more him trying to say, okay, let me try to get away from Walt. And I wouldn't get away from his body. So I knew that if I stayed in his chest, that he wasn't going to get away. And once he decided, okay, this is it, he knew that the play was, you know, he had an opportunity to score. And he was like, man, so it kind of happened so weird, and it happened in that game, and that magnitude of that game was pretty awesome.
What was that like? What do you remember of that game?
Man, it was amazing, man. Just to be, you know, we had did everything right. You know, we was playing football at a pretty high level at that time, and we felt as an offensive line that we could go out there and we could block anybody. And I think, you know, the city felt that way. Everybody in the league knew where the plays were going. So I think that was a pretty awesome season for us at the offensive line, you know, blocking with Hutch, Toback, Chris Gray, Sean Locklear. We felt pretty good. You know, we was definitely a tight unit, and we wanted to take it upon ourselves to go out there and let Matt and let Sean, all those guys run free. And we wanted to block those guys, man. It felt so good. And for us to do that in Seattle, to do that in front of our fans, to be able to say that we was the first team to get the Seahawks to the Super Bowl, but we didn't win it. But still, again, it was awesome. You know, anytime you can celebrate that with your fans, that's pretty awesome. You know, I got a chance to celebrate that with the Seahawks when they went to the first Super Bowl and the second Super Bowl. So, you know, it's awesome, man, to be able to share that stuff with your fans, because they the one that really appreciate that moment. So for us as a unit to be able to do that in Seattle in front of all those people that had been waiting for so long to see their team get to the Super Bowl was pretty awesome.
Well, you mentioned Steve Hutchinson. He's up to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, you know, among the finalists this year. What were your feelings when you saw that?
I think it's awesome, man. I think he's well-deserving, man. You know, it's a long list now, so I think you have to get, you know, I think when I was going in, when you get to that top 25, that's when you start to get nervous, uh-huh. You know. So, right now you just wait and see what happens. You know, once you get to that top 25 and, you know, you start counting down, you get to the top 15, that's when you start getting nervous. That's when you start rooting and saying, okay, now who are you really thinking? I know that's a tough decision for those writers, but, you know, if he get in there this year, man, he's well-deserving of it. You know, this guy definitely, once he came in this league, was a top-tier player that played at a very high level. And for offensive linemen, I think the thing that you have to look at is that a guy that can come out and play consistent, you know, you get better every year. And you can look at it, you know, people, real fans, and really don't look at offensive line. But if you look at offensive line from his rookie year to he's done, you can really see a guy that played at a very high level, at a Pro Bowl, at a Hall of Fame level, was a guy that consistently got better every year. And I think that's as a unit, you can see that. You know, that's the way I played. I'll go back and say, okay, this is what I want to play. And then when you're playing, you look at guys that you play with or guys that you played against. You know, you have some great guys going against you. You know, you just had guys that you could compete with just on a level as an offensive lineman looking at it. So for me, I'm hoping that, you know, he get in. It'd be a, you know, I think he's going. If he do go in, I think he want to go in as a Seahawk. So I think that'll be totally awesome, man. So we'll see what happens, man. I'm rooting for him, and hopefully that he can come on home and be with all his other brothers.
2005. You mentioned that season. That was a special season, and not only, I mean, going to the Super Bowl, but that was the first year, the only year the Seahawks have ever had a player earn Most Valuable Player. How cool was that to be part of an MVP season with Sean Alexander?
It was awesome, man. It's kind of like one of those things where, you know, we was, you know, the couple of years before that, you know, we was feeling good about where the offense was going. I think Homer felt good where we was going. And then we're coming into that 05 season, we felt pretty good where we had a great offensive line with guys that had been together for a couple of years, and the receivers that we had, the quarterback, you know, everybody was really, you know, what they say, kind of prime at their peak of their career. So it really, you know, you thought, okay, this is our year. And we kind of started out slow, and I think we went into the Washington game, and we was kind of like, we was messing, you know, kind of having a bad game there. Then all of a sudden we started clicking in that second half, and we, you know, we kind of made a game out of it, and we came up short at the end there. But that was the kind of the game that kind of clicked us and said, okay, this is the way we can play. We can play like that. And we went on like an 11 game winning streak, man. So you can kind of feel how good that team was, that we were scoring at a very high level, being like scoring on the 80 and taking a drive down. You know, we was pretty good. We was pretty consistent, and we was pretty confident in what we can do once we got on the football field. So that was a great season, man. You know, the only thing that you take away from that season is that we didn't win at all. And we went in there as the number one seed, and we didn't finish it off. And I, you know, that's the only thing that you can take from that season that we didn't do. We didn't finish it off. And that's the one thing that you feel bad about, that we felt we was the better team, but, you know, any given Sunday you can be beaten, and that's what happened to us.
Man, I feel bad about that Washington game too. You know, you bring that up, Walt, and I went to two games while I was living on the East Coast, and it was the game against Baltimore and the game against Washington. I never got to see the Seahawks win on the East Coast.
But you know, man, like I said, I tell people all the time, that was the game that we kind of everything clicked for us. We kind of started out slow in that game, and you know, the talk was about the Seahawks can't win on the East Coast, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we didn't take that into consideration, but, you know, it was in that second half where things started clicking as a unit, as offense. You know, we didn't, like I said, we didn't win that game, but we felt pretty good once we got to the locker room. We got back on the bus, got back in the knees, and we felt pretty good where this offensive unit was looking, going out, coming out to that game. And that's when everything just started clicking, and we went out there, and like I said, we went out there and won like 11 games in a row, and like you say, we had an MVP running back, and that was pretty awesome. You know, the things that Sean was able to do, and we, you know, as a unit, we looked forward to that, putting Sean on the safety. He knew all he had to do was beat the safety. We had Max Strong, an all-pro fullback. You know, that's a pretty good combination. You got a top-tier offensive line, you got a top-tier fullback, and all you had to do is beat that safety. you know, it was playing cat and mouse. So, and that was pretty awesome, man.
Well, before you go, there's one other question I want to ask you about raising the 12 flag, because that was a tradition that was started when you were playing with the team. And now you've had the opportunity to be up there and raise the flag yourself. What's that honor been like for you?
It's been awesome, man. I think it gives you a chance to kind of take in the fans. You know, you play the game so much, and you never, you know, you see that stuff going on when you was playing, but you're so focused on getting ready for the game. And I know it, you know, and now you get former players and guys that the team respect or the fans respect. So you get the fans in it. So for me, it was awesome, man. Anytime you get a chance, especially getting up there, you know, you never get a chance to get up to that level where I guess you would say the real fans up at the 300 level. So you get a chance to hang out with those fans, man, and get a chance to tell those fans thank you for everything, and they appreciate you and stuff. So anytime you get a chance to root the team on and get the team pumped up and get ready for a game, it's pretty awesome.
And Walt, have you thought about what you would do if you were still playing today with regard to the Anthem demonstrations?
You know, that's been a topic of discussion, man. And, you know, I respect everything that the NFL have done, everything what the players are doing. You know, I think a lot of players would, you know, I think it's a team effort. I think everybody is in this together. So I think, you know, a lot of what the teams did yesterday was, you know, it had to be a team effort. And I think that's a sign of showing unity that, hey, we all in this together. And still, again, everybody have their freedom of speech to do whatever they want to do at the end. I think that was great to let players decide on what they want to do. And, you know, at that moment, I would have did whatever, you know, the team would have wanted us to do. You know, I was raised to stand for the national anthem, and that's all I know. But from a standpoint of, you know, doing what's right, you know, I would have been there with my teammates and making sure we do what's right.
Walt, I really want to thank you for coming on the show this week. And where's the best place to follow you and find out where to go when FanCom launches?
Yes, you can go to my Twitter account. That's BigWalt71, and my Instagram, BigWalt71. So anytime that I post on FanCom, that's where I'm going to post that on my Twitter account.
Awesome. Well, Walt, so happy we could have you on the show. Looking forward to checking it out. Go Hawks.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. Go Hawks.
On this week's 3-3 Out, we delve into a tough road loss versus the Titans, sending our beloved Seahawks to 1-2. But do we see action green shoots so that we don't feel so blue? We'll discuss the role of Big Perm, Big Sherm, the return of Russ's sexy deep balls, and a whole lot more. So read this week's article exclusively written for the Seahawkers Podcast at seahawkerspodcast.com/3i30, and go Hawks.
All right, Adam, let's get right into this matchup with the Indianapolis Colts. 1-2 overall for 2017 in the NFC South. And the Colts so far, I don't know about you, just does not seem like a team that I'm worrying about, especially with Andrew Luck still unable to play.
You know, really the only guy that concerns me a tiny bit is Circle Button Brissett.
Yeah.
That was a really cool spin move he had in the last game. It was surprising. Like when he did it, I was like, whoa, I didn't know he had it in him, because he's kind of a big dude.
Yeah, he's the one guy that I would be concerned about, too. Easily better than Scott Tolzien out there. Like Jacoby Brissett can actually get the ball downfield, where Tolzien, I mean, well, we haven't seen that much of him. He played the one game, but it's easy to see the
one
Brissett,
too many.
Easy to see that Brissett is the best quarterback among that group. You know, one touchdown is all, one INT, but his one touchdown, 61 yards this season. It's kind of surprising to see that he has four sacks based on his elusiveness, but I think those seven sacks speak to the fact that the Indianapolis Colts offensive line still isn't that good.
Yeah, they're a tough unit, or you know, they're a unit that struggles. They're not great. And I think one of the things that's really going to manifest itself in this game is the return of Death Row. Like, that was one of the disappointments from the last game when it comes to the defense, is really, where was the pass rush? I didn't really see that. I would look for that to return here against the Colts. If that happens, because it's going to. Look, they're going to have a really difficult time on the road in the clink with the crowd noise. Brissett's a young quarterback. What does he have for weapons? T.Y. Hilton and the corpse of Frank Gore? Like, that's pretty much all that's left. It's going to be a difficult game for them to move the ball at all.
The first time that the Colts return to CenturyLink Field, the last time they were here was in 2005. It was still called Quest Field. That was the only time that they've played actually in the stadium since the Kingdome was blown up. So not this is a team that we don't get to see very often. And it's a little bit unfortunate to me that we can't avenge that 2013 loss to Andrew Luck with Jacoby Brissett in the backfield now this time.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but I don't care, man. I'll take the win. The one thing that I really want to see early in this game, and this does kind of couple with how you were feeling earlier, is the idea that I want to see the offense continue with the proficiency that it ended the game with in Tennessee, because the Colts are a team much like the Niners, only with a lesser defense.
Yeah.
And I would really like to see this game turn out like 24-9. Something like that. That's kind of my expectation. That's where I think they should go. And I think the offensive line will play even better being back at home. I would expect time of possession, much like in the Niners game, to be lopsided in the Seahawks' favor.
Definitely want to run the ball a lot more against this Colts team. Just control the game. And they have to be able to get to Brissett. Now, he's going to get away at times, and I would expect him to see the Colts get some first downs where Brissett gets out of the pocket, throws downfield to T.Y. Hilton, because he can be a tough guy to cover for that amount of time if Brissett's able to get out of the pocket, look downfield. But the one thing that I would say is if the Colts approach the Seahawks defense the way they did against the Browns, they're doomed. Because it seemed like the game plan against the Browns was just to chuck it up downfield toward the sidelines and try to either come down with a football or get a pass interference. And that's where you really saw the Colts able to move the ball against the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's half of the offensive coordinator's game plan in the NFL right now. Is throw it deep and hope for a penalty or incomplete pass. You know, it is the worst thing that happens to you. Like, you either get the completion or the penalty and you're off to the races. So, yeah, they're going to struggle mightily with that. One thing that the Seahawks have done well throughout the beginning of the year is not give up the big pass. They gave up the one to Jordy Nelson in the end zone early in the Green Bay game. But again, that's freaking Aaron Rodgers trickery with a stupid, quick snap count and all that. And Jacoby Brissett isn't particularly fast. It's not like, he's going to run around and do Mariota things. I mean, he's
sure.
He's like a Cam Newton minus, And I've seen this defense really give Cam Newton fits throughout his career. I think Jacoby Brissett's going to have a long day.
Well, the cool thing about this game and what I'm really looking forward to is the fact that we're bringing back the wave for Kenny Easley. We're going to retire number 45 in this game. What a cool honor for Kenny Easley.
That is pretty cool, man. And I love the idea of bringing the wave back for one game for the enforcer. If you're there, and I know you will be, Brandon, if you're there, get your butt up and participate in the wave. It's for a Hall of Famer.
You got to do it. It must be done. I know it's kind of fallen out of favor, but when your Hall of Fame enforcer safety says it is Hall of Fame speech, that we have to bring it back. We have to do it.
Right. And so, Brandon, I'm going to challenge you in this way. Mm. You know how when I don't think the fans are behaving the way that they ought to, I yell at them?
You do yell at them, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not there, so I'm going to need you to yell at them.
Okay.
If they're not participating in the wave.
I will accept that challenge and take it on. And yes, if people are not getting up out of their seats for the wave, I will get down in front of the crowd myself and show them how to do it.
I love it. I love it.
All right, Adam. Well, I really don't think I have a whole lot left to say about this matchup with the Colts, especially considering our connection isn't super solid for this game. I know you're on the road. I know you're traveling. I think listeners will appreciate the fact that you're making it work. But I think we're going to have to get to some things that we're going to have to change things up a little bit to what we had planned this week.
Yeah, I'm in Emmett, Idaho today, and I'm with the travel mic here, Hawk Mike. See, I fixed it for you.
You fixed
Brandon.
It.
Do you like that?
I like that.
But holy crap, the connection is terrible. I've lost Brandon like 4 times. All of a sudden, his face will just freeze on my screen. And the only thing more terrifying than Brandon's face is Brandon's frozen face. And so it's just been tough. But I think we were going to try to address, we didn't want to talk about this for the rest of the year. Like, I thought we had kind of done it once in the show and that would be it. But this turned into a national story, the whole protest thing. So I think we're going to have to downshift on that, because there's no way we can have a good conversation with the connection like this.
And maybe we can try and save it for next week, or do maybe a special episode that we put out, if you get that way you can ignore it or tune in if you want. And that might be the best way to approach this week, because we did put a lot of time and effort into putting some thoughts together. Some people sent in some great emails who representing different sides of the issue. I hate to say both sides. I'm tired of saying both sides of an issue, because then it makes it seem like there's just two. And when you have an issue as complex and in-depth as this, everybody has different perspectives. So I can't say that there's two sides or both sides. There's everybody thinks and feels differently.
So all the sides?
All the sides.
Okay. I like it. Well, here, I'll just sum up a little bit of this for you guys just real quick. The president, got on and ran his mouth a little bit on the Twitter because he loves doing it. Pissed off the entire NFL. They got mad and it was a big brouhaha. There, I think I did it. Did I nail it?
If people are tuning into this show to get that much depth on it, I think that it was probably covered enough just even on local news.
Yeah. And that, and I forgot to add that the Bond villain owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars locked arms with his players.
He has an awesome mustache.
He's a Bond villain, dude. There's no doubt. Yeah. Shad Khan is planning to like take over all the world's water, or make a slave camp on the moon or something. Uh-huh. Like, he's a Bond villain.
He's coming up with all his plans. I'm sure as he twists the tips on that mustache.
Oh, it's solid, man. It is a solid mustache.
All right, Adam. Well, we do have some new members of the flock to welcome this week. Also, I'll start off with another PayPal donation from Mark Gretzinger. He sent in $5, said you guys are great. As insightful and entertaining as any of the shows on 710. Keep up the terrific podcasting.
Oh, nice, man. That actually means a lot. I mean, because they're our competition.
I don't know about that.
You're right. They are way below us.
They're way below us. We're way out ahead of everybody. Nobody can compete.
Yeah, exactly.
And some new members of the flock I mentioned. $5 from Chris. Welcome to the flock to Chris. That's how you stay anonymous. Just put your first name in here. Or you could do like the $3 pledge from Andriy Adamov, which is clearly a made up name. So welcome to the flock to Andriy.
Oh, that's clearly made up?
Well, it's
made
not
up?
Clearly, sure but I do know that it's made up.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess technically every name is made up. Like
eventually.
Your parents have to your parents have to make it up when you're born. They're like, this thing, we'll call it Brandon.
They know? Got that from somewhere though. They didn't make it up.
Well, they made it up for you. Like, Brandon, Schultz. Like, yeah.
Welcome to the flock to Peter Weller, a $3 pledge. So thanks to both of you. Everybody I mentioned will be getting in the Pick'em League. And also welcome to the flock to Martin Simpson Hughes, in for $1 for stickers and bonus shows. Welcome to the flock to Martin.
Yeah, definitely welcome. Welcome to all the little flockers this week. I'm happy to have you. I hope maybe that the bonus show that we put out there for everybody is just kind of an example. You're listening to that and you're like, yeah, I could use a little more of that. Like, that'd be nice.
Yeah, put out the bonus show last week and I put it out for a few days. So people who wanted to check that out as it led up to the games on Sunday. And a big part of that was because I forgot to announce the leaderboard. And so I'm going to get into that. Also want to thank Hector, who gave us a little bit of a raise this last week up to his pledge to $7.
Ooh, Hector's becoming a big spender.
Yes, thanks to Hector.
I appreciate it, man.
Well, let's look down the leaderboard this week at our Seahawkers podcast. You can go to, it's not too late, you could still get in the Pick'em League. Go to seahawkerspodcast.com/pick'em, and there's a link in the show notes, and there's a link on the website. So if you go to the latest show, look down in the show notes, seahawkerspodcast.com/pick'em. There's also a link to register your team name. And I'm going to stop reading just the generic team names if they're on the leaderboard, because I have a feeling that some of these people are just seeing us on NFL.com and thinking that they want to get in our league because we have over 400 members now. But I'm going to say, if you listen to the show, you have to figure out, you have to go find the gear at NFL.com and change your team name so it's not a generic, you know, like username. I want to see team names, so I'm just going to announce those from now on. And the top three team names this week: Chocolate Salty Rawls, still up at the top of the leaderboard at 450 points. Bend the Knee at 440 points. Ultras at 440 points. And I think Seahawk Jake, I recognize that name. I'm gonna call him out. Seahawk Jake at 410 points. Also Zach Goings, 91, Z Goings 91, 420 points. Yeah. So shout out to those folks.
Yeah, we know Zach
at the top of our leaderboard. But Zach, Seahawk Jake, change your names, man. Change your team names.
Yeah, you got to come up with something more creative than that. Like, I mean, I know I let Aaron Goings' wife come up with mine for me because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can enlist help. There's nothing that says that you can't. You got to do it all on your own.
Here's one I know you'd like. PBR, you serious?
I saw that one. That one's solid. That one's very solid.
And for those of you who are in the flock, we'll announce this week's winners. We had a tie this week, Adam. I want to talk about how we're going to handle that.
Okay, cool. It must have been a tie with like a total points of what, like 15? Like, I swear to God, like you only get credit for like half a game, because I don't know. Everybody had to have done terribly this week. If you did well this week, you have made a deal with the devil, and there is something unholy about your picks. I'm quite certain of that.
Well, just in our Seahawkers podcast league, we had seven people with 150 points. Peaceful, Easily Feeling, Caught With Your Fants Down.
Which are both solid team names, but you're either both soulless and redheaded, or you've made a deal with the devil. That's the only way that you got all of these picks right this week. There's no way you could have predicted this week. It was the most topsy-turvy week I can remember in the NFL. I mean, Blake Bortles threw for four touchdowns this week. Four touchdowns!
Yeah, that's not something that generally happens.
No, he had to go to another continent to do it, but still, you know.
Well, congrats to everybody who had 150 points. Congrats to those of you who even got into the bonus as well. Kirby Tomato Soup, Gaylord Flocker, Bossman Caden, Northwest Homer. There's a lot of people who got into the bonus. Boner Jams 03, You Look So Beautiful That Night. There's Barry the Redskin, Turd and Long. Quite a few people with 140. What did we do wrong this week?
Nothing. All I'm telling you, these people are cheating. I guarantee you, Turd and Long has a advanced degree in computer programming and hacked NFL.com and changed half their picks after the fact. That is a true fact. You can look it up.
If you have that kind of knowledge, I'm going to allow it.
Oh, okay. Just out of respect?
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. If you can hack in and fix your score after the fact and only fix it enough to just get yourself into the bonus, not to go all crazy and give yourself a perfect run for the week, I will honor that.
You're just afraid that Turd and Long's going to come steal your identity.
Well, and that too.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
All right, Adam, well, what do you say we move along and get into some Do Better and Better at Life?
All right, man, I'm going to start us out with Do Better this week, because my Do Better this week, Brandon, is for the 2017 Toyota Camry. That's right. I can't believe this car had 4,500 miles on it. 4,500 miles. And I fly into Arkansas 2 hours late already because United can never take a plane off in time. Like, I think it's in the rules somewhere. And I get to Arkansas, pick up this 2017 Camry, drive 2.5 hours towards my final destination to a mill in between where I pick up equipment when I work down there. I hop out of the car. It is now 8 o'clock at night, and I load up the equipment, hop back in the car, pop, 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 pop. Nothing. I'm like, well, that's freaking weird. I must have to just buckle my seatbelt or something. There's got to be this little random sensor. Pop, 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 pop. Nothing. And I'm like, okay. That's really bizarre too. I know I've had the seatbelt sensor yell at me if I've had like a heavy bag in the passenger seat. Maybe I just need to move that and it'll start, you know. Bop 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 bop. Nothing. Now I'm pissed because I'm in a little town of Leola, Arkansas. There's 500 people, 5 churches, no bars, dry county. And like, now I know I'm getting stuck here. I have a few tools. So I was like, all right, I'm going to try a couple things. Disconnected the negative battery cable, was like, it ran the juice out of the system. It's like, ah, maybe that'll reset the computer. Put it back together. Nothing. I was like, all right, this just has to be a stupid little sensor somewhere. So I go, there's a little button that you can get to override the sensor that tells you that your shifter's in park, because if it's not in park, it won't let it start.
Yeah.
I get that. Yeah. Get the override set. Do it again. Nothing. I was like, okay, there's also a sensor on the brake pedal that senses to make sure that the brake is depressed, you know? So I go through all that, you know, get it. So I know for a fact that it's depressed and there's no way that it can't be given the wrong signal. Nothing. I'm stranded there. Oh, on top of all of that, there's no freaking cell service for Verizon customers in Leola, Arkansas. So by the grace of God, the gal at the gas station, like, allowed me to give Enterprise a call, finally get a tow truck out there. 3 hours later, I still have another 4 hours to drive to my final destination to be at the mill at 5 a.m. the next day. Go get towed back. They give me a new rental car. And here's the only silver lining. As I go to hop in the truck and I look down, and it's got Montana plates. But not only that, Brandon, it had Kalispell, Montana plates, our hometown where you live. I had a little piece of home while driving around, and that turned out to be an excellent truck, by the way. But for leaving me stranded with 4,500 miles, the whole ignition system crapped out. 2017 Toyota Camry, do better.
Wow. Yeah, you hadn't let me know this whole story until now. That's unacceptable.
That was unacceptable. It cost me a whole half a day. I had to sleep in Little Rock, which was 2 hours back, the opposite direction of which I needed to drive.
Well, at least you're on to the next job now. And we saw a lot of BS this weekend. And I know I said we weren't necessarily going to have the serious discussion about it, but it doesn't mean we can't have a fun discussion about it. And that's the topic of my Do Better this weekend, because I think we saw sports and politics mixed to a degree that I'm having a hard time pointing to in my adult life. I don't remember seeing a mixture like this up until this point. And some people are having a really hard time with it, especially Daniel Moranz, who is a general assignment reporter for the Huffington Post with a focus on politics and economic policy. His headline, Adam: Pittsburgh Steelers stay off the field during anthem. Crowd boos them when they return. And the opening sentence of the paragraph is: the Pittsburgh Steelers chose not to enter the field during the playing of the national anthem on Sunday, eliciting boos from the crowd at Chicago's Soldier Field football stadium. This is the time where I check the comments, because when I saw this, I had to be thinking, am I the crazy one here? But no, in the comments, Stephen Smith says, the other team booed when they came out on the field. Wow. It's almost like that happens every week, regardless of when they come out on the field. Casey Lee says, I had to read that header 3 times to make sure I read it correctly. Oh, no. The opposing team was booed out of the tunnel. Shocker. Yes. And it's not like Daniel was the lone wolf in this, in the Huffington Post writing this. My wife and I were watching the coverage on CNN as the early game started. And I wanted to see what they were talking about, what they were discussing. And I heard another guy on CNN saying the same thing, that the Steelers were booed as they were coming out of the tunnel. And the female asks him directly, are you sure that's why they're booing? And he goes, well, we can only assume that's the case. No, no, you can't assume that. If you've ever been to a football game, you know the standard etiquette is to boo the opposing team when they come onto the field. That's what we do. Come on, Daniel. Come on, CNN. Do better.
That's actually really funny. Now, I will say, knowing the Huffington Post, I am not stunned. I'm not stunned that maybe sports isn't exactly their wheelhouse. You know what I mean?
I know.
Like, where they might get that just a little off there. But the simplest explanation is always the truest one. And so, of course, they jump to the wrong conclusion, write a stupid headline, and Daniel, I don't watch football, screwed up. That's what happened right there.
He screwed up. I understand. It's not your wheelhouse. But dude, an editor has to see that and go, I don't think that's right.
Apparently, they don't study the lines. You know, they don't go through and do their pick'ems every week and be like, yeah, Pittsburgh's on the road and Chicago can be a tough place.
Right.
You know?
All right, Adam. On to better at life.
My better at life this week, Brandon, is also travel related. And it is for the fine Holiday Motel in Emmett, Washington. No, this isn't the Holiday Inn. This isn't the Holiday Inn Express. This is a privately owned little motel. And the difference between a motel and a hotel, because most people screw this up, the hotel, your doors are inside in the hallways, right?
Right.
Whereas the motel, your door opens to the outside and you get to pull like right up to it. So this is a small little motel. You can tell it's probably been here forever, but it seems to have been recently remodeled. I met the owner last night when I checked in. She knew exactly who I was. I didn't even have to pull out ID. Like, she had her big friendly dog right there. And the password for the Wi-Fi, and I'm sure this is giving away a state secret, is wagging tail. Like, she's got a whole bunch of stuff about how dogs are welcome. She obviously loves dogs. But what's really cool about it is this place actually has personality. Like, everything is covered in rough cut lumber, which working in sawmills, I appreciate. And it's all beautifully done. And everything is spotless, like absolutely spotless. And it was super friendly. And I like the motel better than the hotel. I like my door opening to the outside, like I'm just leaving my own house rather than having to walk out in the hall and then go down to the lobby and like mingle with people. I'm not into it, surprisingly.
That's weird.
But the other thing that's super cool is they even have a bench built in, like right outside the room, so I can sit and drink beer, you know, at the end of the night outside. I really like that. And there's even like really cool wooden shutters on the inside of my window that like kind of like a saloon would have almost, you know. It's just cool. I like this. It's most homey that I've felt on the road in any hotel or motel. And so for the Holiday Motel in Emmett, Idaho, free ad, and you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
And for anybody traveling to Emmett, Idaho, now they know where to stay.
Well, it's just outside of Boise. So like, okay. You know, and oftentimes everything's booked up in Boise. So here's a little alternative for you.
There you go. Okay. Good travel tip then too.
Yeah, exactly. Pro tip
from the world traveler, Adam Emmert.
Country traveling.
Yeah.
Although my dad called me the other day, he's like, hey, do you want to grind wheels in Bogota? And I was like in Colombia? And he's like, yeah. He's like, I got a call. I kind of have to vet the guy, but do you want to go if it sounds good? And I was like, yeah, I'll go. I'll take a paid vacation to Colombia. You bet. That sounds fantastic.
Wow. So you're going to do it.
Get kidnapped by a cartel.
Yeah, that's what
it sounds like a great time.
Yeah, that sounds like exactly what you don't want to have happen.
Oh, it's not going to happen. I'm sure it's perfectly safe. And not only that, but like, I'm going to have to work on my three phrases of Spanish.
Good luck with that.
We're going to have to. Yeah. Hola. ¿Adónde está el baño? ¿Adónde está las cervezas? That's all I got.
That's all you got. That's all you need.
That's all I need.
All right, Adam. Well, my better at life this week. You know, I feel like on a weekend where some serious stuff happened, I should reserve my time this week to honor something that really important. I probably should, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm going to have some fun instead.
Yes. I'm happy for this.
Urano on Reddit pointed this out, and I had to steal it. In Sunday's Falcons-Lions matchup, every active player with a single-digit jersey number was named Matt. And I thought that was cool. On the Falcons roster, he had number 2, Matt Ryan, number 3, Matt Bryant, number 5, Matt Bosher, and number 8, Matt Schaub. It was kind of shocked to find out that Matt Schaub's still in the league. On the Lions, I know. Lions roster.
They collect all the Mats there.
All the Mats.
They had Matt Barkley for a while.
Yeah. So you have 4 Mats on the Falcons roster. On the Lions roster, you have number 5, Matt Prater, and number 9, Matt Stafford. Half a dozen Mats. In one game, all with single-digit numbers.
Yeah, if you would have just only read off like 3 numbers, I'd have been like, "Yeah, that's not that interesting." But like 6, that's like actually interesting and a little weird. Look at how many parents made up the name Matt for their kid. Yeah,
they made it up. That's one of those easy names to make up too, because it's in the Bible.
Yeah. Depends on how you spell it though. Like you can go with two T's or one T.
These are all double T mats, I think.
They're all double T mats. The rare half dozen double T mats. That's pretty amazing.
But it got me thinking, you know, how many mats have played for the Seahawks over the years? And were they all two T mats or were they one T mats? I found out. Every mat for the Seahawks has been a two T mat. So O lineman, Matt Hanasek, Matt Joyce, Matt Tobin, Matt Hernandez, Matt Hill on the defensive line, Matt LeBounty, linebacker, Matt McCoy, and you got three quarterbacks, Matt Flynn, Matt Leidy, and Matt Hasselbeck. All the mats better at life than Skip Bayless.
There's a lot of mats I had never heard of. I'm not going to lie. You dug deep. I don't know how you did that research, but if you put half as much effort as you did into your better at life this week, into like, you know, the first half of the show, we'd have a way better show because I'm not going to put in any more effort. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, no, that's impressive. That was a deep dive, dude.
I should probably front load my effort considering most people don't listen all the way through the show.
Well, that's their loss then.
Yeah.
See? You got to reward the people that listen all the way to the end. All the little flockers that are faithful enough to do that, reward them.
Yes. If you listen all the way through the show and you're not a member of the flock, you can go to getintheflock.com. Most people tuned out after the Walter Jones interview. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that's probably true. I'm going to fast forward to the Walter Jones interview.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to tune out right after.
It was super cool having him on this week. I'm so bummed that you missed it, Adam. But I totally understand you weren't willing to risk missing a plane flight. To me, I think it was worth the risk. But to you, it may be different.
There's no way in hell I was getting stuck in the South for a minute longer than I had to. I was getting back to Montana. And not only that, but like I didn't want to delay anything because my connection in Denver was like super tight. And you know, this should have been my do better. I get off in Denver. Just quick story. I get off at gate B65. I look at my ticket, or because I got the United app, right? I'm like looking at it. I was like, so where's my next gate? Well, it's B65.
Oh.
So I look at the gal and I was like, well, I'm just getting right back on. So I'm just going to head over there. And she's like, no. I was like, what do you mean no? I was like, this is my plane. She's like, nope, you have to walk all the way out. And like, and you're down in the tule weeds at the Denver airport for these little flights. You got to walk all the way out, go up the stairs, go all the way around and walk around and then come back and rescan in to get back on the plane you just got off of. When I got on the plane, the stewardess looked at me and she goes, weren't you just? And I was like, yeah, I really missed you. And by the end of the flight, she accused me of being her stalker. Like, there's nothing I could do about it. Yeah. Like, I didn't plan this out, but at least I knew. Well, then the other alarming thing was when we landed, we got delayed coming out of Denver due to a maintenance issue. I was like, did something go wrong on the plane on the way from Arkansas to here? Like, that was a little alarming. But it was a quick fix. It was only like 5 minutes, so it must not have been a big deal. Maybe a windshield wiper came off. I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. Because I can't think of anything on a plane that would take 5 minutes to fix.
I don't know. Maybe the coffee maker was broken. I have no idea.
It takes me longer than five minutes to change a windshield wiper.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I don't even need a ladder for that.
All right, now that I took the show totally off the rails, I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Oh, did you lose me?
I lost you. I just got back.
Okay. I've totally lost you.
Oh.
Let me connect to the other Wi-Fi real quick.
Okay.
Well, that doesn't...
There you are.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
That doesn't bode well.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. This might be worse.
No. I think you're locking up again. You got me?
Yeah, crap. Yeah, I got you.
It was so far behind, I just hung up.
Oh, yeah. No, you were frozen forever.
Yeah.
I got you back?
I lost you.
Okay. Yeah, I lost you. A peaceful, easily feeling.
Okay.
I don't know how this can suck this bad, but it does.